everyone, and welcome back. This week, we are talking about the 1993 Halloween classic, Disney's Hocus Pocus. As always, you don't have to watch the movie in order to listen to the episode, but we always recommend it, as our episodes are rarely spoiler-free. So, let's get rolling. I'm your host, Audrey.
And I'm your co-host, Cherie.
So sit back, relax, and please don't silence your phone while we check your cinematic pulse. Summary of movie, Hocus Pocus details the initial demise and return of the fictional Sanderson sisters, three witches hanged during the Salem witch trials in Massachusetts. When their original curse is fulfilled, they are brought back to life for one night on Halloween in 1993, and it's up to three young children to stop them from becoming immortal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny watching this film. Like, I haven't really paid attention to this film my entire life. Just kind of watch it because
really?
It's just kind of one of those like cult classes, like A Christmas Story that you watch every year because you have your whole life. And I'm sitting here thinking, watching this film, especially at the beginning when the Sanderson sisters are hanged, I'm like, man, we got away with this in the 90s. Who's so dark?
90s were a wild time. 80s and 90s all together were just like the wild west of culture.
We just got away with then.
I mean, we were, I feel like, a little bit more emotionally resilient back then. We just didn't care about other people's feelings as much.
It was so weird watching it and trying to reconcile all the feelings I had between, like, this is dark, but also humorous. I don't know right? which emotion I'm supposed to feel right now.
Both. You're supposed to feel both, because that's the 80s.
Like, so many people died at the beginning of the movie, and I'm like, like, this is a comedy.
The daughter, like the 7-year-old daughter actually bit the dust in the beginning of the film, and I was like, ooh, that's dark.
Five characters died in the first, like, 15 minutes, and I'm like,
Right? So, it's funny that you bring that up, because this was, just elephant in the room, this was my first time watching this movie all the way through, ever.
That's insane. You have to have been living under a rock.
I was, in fact, living under a rock. I was living under a small, shiny Baptist rock.
I have to ask,
it might have been a communion wafer.
With this being your first time watching it ever, was it weird to watch such an old film and try to get into it without having, you know, grown up with it?
So I love that you ask that, because I made it a point to adjust my mindset going into this movie, and I tried to watch it without a scrutinous eye. I tried to go into the movie just with, like, an open-minded, trusting, dewy-eyed kid brain,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, how I would have been as a little kid watching this movie. And I'm really glad that I took the time to, like, find that mental space, because I found myself cracking up at this movie. I loved it. And I'm like, okay, I understand. Here's the thing. I understand, and, like, no hate to my mom for not letting me watch this as a kid, because let's be honest, as a kid, there's definitely parts that would have absolutely terrified me, and I would not have been able to sleep at night, and I would have been very upset inside. So I completely understand why my mom did not let me watch this movie as a kid. That being said, I think there's probably an age that I could have handled it and been totally fine with it, probably like around 10, 11, 12. And I would have been fine. But, like, I mean, at that point, this came out the year I was born.
Yeah, right? I can honestly tell you, I'm not sure how old I was the first time I watched this film. I think I had to be in, like, elementary school for sure.
Right. So I'm thinking, like, I understand how, even when I hit the age where I could have handled a movie like this, like, just like Harry Potter, my mom vetted it when it first came out. Thought it was a little bit too thematic, didn't like it for us, but then it let us watch it eventually. I think by the time I was old enough to handle this movie, like, too much time had passed for my mom to be super aware of it. So we just, like, never got around to watching it. And then it was just, there's a lot of movies like that from my childhood. Stuff that I wouldn't have been allowed to watch when I was younger. By the time I got old enough to watch it, too much time had passed, and it kind of, like, fell under the radar. And I think this was kind of where this movie wound
up. Yeah, there are a lot of cult classics I grew up with. Like, I have a friend, Stephanie, looking at you, that has never watched A Christmas Story. And it's one of those, if you didn't grow up with it, you're probably never going to watch it. Which is why I'm glad you actually took this, ran with it, and watched it and enjoyed it. Which was recommended by our fan, Katie. Thank you.
Yes, this is a fan pick. Katie picked this movie. So, and I'm glad she did, because now I finally got to watch it. I finally got to watch this movie all the way through. I was at my friend's house a few years ago, and she had started watching it. But I jumped into the movie right as the kids are going into the Sanderson house. Mm-hmm. And that's like 30 minutes into the movie. So I had missed a lot of exposition that I think is really crucial for setting up the, like, setting the tone for this movie.
Especially knowing the story, like, of what the Sanderson sisters are trying to achieve.
Right. Like, I jumped in at the important part, but there was just, like I said, there was a lot of tone setting that takes place.
Why is there a talking cat? What is his background?
I gave my cat, because I have a black cat, I gave my cat a middle name now, and my cat's middle name is Binks now.
Love it. As it should be, rightfully.
His name is Remington Binks, and I just think that's so appropriate, and just handsome and posh.
Not Thackeray.
And he looks just like little Thackeray. Well, Remington Thackeray is just too much, okay?
Oh my god, I need you to say that for me one more time.
Remington Thackeray. Excuse me as I put my monocle back in.
Oh my goodness, continue.
Yeah, so that's not gonna work. But yeah, I did really enjoy this time around. Okay, question for you. As somebody who grew up watching this movie.
Yes.
Why is this movie, if you had to put your finger on it, why is this movie such a cult classic as a Halloween movie?
It's funny you ask that, because I've been thinking all day. Like, a cult classic is one of those films that it somehow gets popular for no good reason whatsoever. And it's again, like A Christmas Story. I keep bringing this up. I'm going to make everyone watch it this year with our podcast. It's my Christmas
choice. Oh, yeah, we didn't do Christmas Story last year. No, so but we got to do it this year.
It's one of those films, just like Hocus Pocus, where it's a cult classic. You grew up with it. It's part of your nostalgia. You watch it like 8 times during Halloween, and then you move on with your life and do it again next year. But honestly, I don't know what I would put my finger on to make it a cult classic. It very much fits the vibe of the 90s. And obviously, as 90s babies, mm-hmm. it's something we can relate to. Like, it's funny watching it. I was looking at Allison's sweater. I was like, I'd wear that.
Bro, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, let me go grab my cardigan. I know I can find that sweater somewhere. And I've got, like, the little wide leg barrel jeans. I just bought a pair of little penny loafers the other week. So I could totally put that outfit, that exact outfit, right together.
And
because
then Max's,
the 90s are back with a vengeance.
Max's Nikes, popular. Nike's as popular as ever, yes, with their shoes. It's so funny because now, as, you know, 32-year-old, it's interesting to, like, even feel more nostalgia now because those, like, trends are, like, becoming trendy again.
I know. It feels so weird, man.
But
it feels so weird. I told you, completely unrelated, small rabbit trail. I went to a thrift market a few weekends ago, just as like, it was like a fun thing. It was a multi-day thing. Lots of like vintage and antique vendors and stuff. And let me tell you, I felt so very old because so many of the things for sale at this vintage market were things from our childhood.
I always think, I don't know why quintessential childhood is like the Hercules McDonald's plates or whatever. I don't know why anytime I see those in like a Goodwill somewhere, I'm like, oh goodness, look at that.
Yes. Like we were going through there, and one of the things where I was like, whoa, is do you remember, I guess these are actually even older than this, but I forget what they're actually called, but they're like golden something books, and they were little books, and they had like cardboard covers, and then
yeah,
a little
but in like
gold
the gold
foil spine.
Yeah, had some. Yep.
Yeah, I had some too. There were some for sale at the vintage market.
Isn't that crazy?
And I was like,
and it's
excuse
like,
me?
Are we that old? I guess we are that old. We're like a quarter, a third way through our arguable lives.
I guess when something hits like 20, 30 years old, that's when it officially becomes vintage. Like when we're 50 and they're calling stuff from our childhood antique, then I'll cry.
And but it's funny you say that because it's, you know, those things give me the warm fuzzies, like this film, you know, it's like curling up in your favorite blanket during fall, right? Anything that makes you just feel all those things you felt as a kid. You know, the warm
your
thoughts.
Yearly Gilmore Girls rewatch.
I've never seen Gilmore Girls, but that's, I don't need to be scolded for it. I already know.
I hadn't watched it until a few years ago either. It's cute in its own way, especially the first few seasons. They're very cute. It's very idyllic. It's very cute. I definitely recommend it. It's great for fall watching because it starts in the fall. So,
but yeah, I have also started to answer your question, I don't know what makes this a cult classic, but it's just warm. It just reminds me of my childhood. It's one of those things where I may not watch Hocus Pocus every year, but it's one of those I try to catch up on every couple of years just to like relive that nostalgia. It just reminds me of my childhood. So it's a fun film. It's unserious. I just think people like it for that.
It is very unserious. Question on that. We keep calling it a cult classic, right? So correct me if I'm wrong. Cult classic is something that got popular after its original release. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't popular when it was first released. It got popular afterwards, right? Am I right?
I would say something like that, yeah.
So do we put this movie in that category or was it popular when it first came out? Do you know? Or did it get popular later?
I have no idea. It's funny because I've always known it to be popular amongst our age group and older. So like, if I ask my niece, I don't know if she's ever watched this film. I wish I could have polled her before I started watching this because she's in the other room. But you know what? Let me text her while we're talking about it. But I don't know because my mom loves this film.
I did some Googling. This is according to the Google AI overview, but it says that Hocus Pocus became popular over time, starting with its repeated airings on Disney-owned channels and eventually becoming a Halloween classic. It does, though. Like, it reminds me, like, it was probably it part of, like the 31 fits. Nights of Halloween ABC Family. Yeah. So, because apparently in July, it released in July? It released in July of 1993. Weird.
Not the best time for a Halloween film. Unless...
It's not.
Hear me out, though. Unless, because at that time, if we're talking about movie releases and release dates on, like, VHS, summertime would be the time for it to come out in theaters for it to be out...
on video by Halloween.
Because those movies would be in theaters for months back then. Now it's like a 90-day turnaround.
Pause for Googling.
My niece said, I asked her, have you seen the movie Hocus Pocus? She said, what? That's a good answer.
Well, that's not good. We're gonna have to rectify that. Wait, she is telling you she hasn't seen it.
That's
right?
What she said. What? So I'm assuming that means no.
Oh lordy. Okay. Well, just we're gonna have to just re-educate her. I don't know. I was thinking maybe something else was gonna come out around Halloween when this movie was released, and they didn't want to. Like, they didn't want to have to compete with it in the box office, but I don't see anything else that was super good that was coming out at the same time. I don't know. It was a box office disappointment.
I know,
opening
my niece is
in
correcting
fourth place
me.
And bringing in only $39.5 million. Critics found the movie too silly, and it lacked a significant promotional campaign. so that was the other thing, is they didn't do promos enough for it. Also, again, they're releasing a Halloween movie in July. Oh, is your niece correcting you?
She said they're watching it right now while we're recording the podcast, her and my mom.
Yes. Excellent. We love the theming.
Seen it before. So, JK, she has seen it.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, and also, I'm looking, and apparently, your theory about it coming out in October, also incorrect. It didn't hit VHS until January of 94.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking... the turnaround back then was much longer than even 3 months. It was like 5 months or six. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it took a longer time for stuff to get cycled out to distribution.
Even pre-COVID, sorry to get very literal on you guys. Before COVID, it was about a 3-month turnaround. But now we're at about a 3 month to 90 day turnaround from theater to streaming. I was gonna say
it's so fast. Well, and it's also you have a chunk of time where the movie, after being in theaters for I feel like 30 to 45 days, becomes available to rent on, like, for the price of going to see a movie on streaming services. Like, for instance, like The Fall Guy. The Fall Guy hit theaters, and then after I feel like not that long, like maybe 45 days.
That's actually, I need to correct myself. I didn't mean to say Amazon. 3 months and 90 days. It's the same thing. 45 days. Anywhere from a 90 day to 45 day turnaround from theater to streaming nowadays. It's insane what things have done since COVID. But this is neither here nor there when it comes to this film.
Yeah, it's all cinematic pulse. What are you talking about? you right. Like, because I remember, what was it? I think something came out during COVID. I think it was Mulan. And it was like a revolutionary idea where instead of people being able to go see movies, they released Mulan for like the price of going to the movies on Disney Plus. And you could,
oh, for
you
sure,
could rent it and just watch it. I think in that your was the same room. With
Black Widow.
But I did, yeah, there was, because there was a whole lawsuit around it. But yeah, so, and then that has now become kind of a precedent. Like I said, there was a chunk of time where you could rent The Fall Guy on Amazon for about, I think it was like $29.99, like essentially the cost
two
of
tickets.
Like a couple of movie tickets. Yeah. Although we have, the Cinemark movie membership, which I highly recommend. Oh, I've got to get, I think I have the ability to get a promo code for that. Well, I'll dig into that and see if we can't get a promo code for you guys for the Cinemark membership, because it's awesome and I highly recommend it. It's only $10. They might have gone up a little bit. It might be like $11, but still, it's so worth it.
So yeah, cult classic. Got popular over time. Thanks, Disney. 31 Nights of Halloween.
Thanks, Disney. Thanks, Disney and the 31 Nights of Halloween.
So how many films,
I know we were in a restaurant
though,
the other
popular.
Night and Casper was on.
Oh, God, Casper.
Yeah, I feel like Casper's one of those. Like the original Casper with Christina Ricci in it. I love that movie. And we got to do that movie.
Well, that's,
some
it's
year
so funny because I think films like Beetlejuice, and I don't come at me, people who love Beetlejuice. I don't.
I've never
seen it. I think I saw it once when I was a kid. And it's one of those films where it's like, was it that good? Was it really that good? And to have a sequel, like, did we, again, another one of those films that, because,
I feel like the sequel is exclusively built on
nostalgia.
But that's
what I'm saying. Like, Hocus Pocus 2, that was built on nostalgia, right? We got Hocus Pocus 2.
When did Hocus Pocus 2
like
come
a year,
out?
2 years ago? 2 years ago, I think. I think I was,
wow,
I was still
really?
In my second college stint, I believe, when it came out. Because I remember talking to my professor about it. But it's one of those things, like, again, if we're talking about cult classics and how things get popular, it's one of those, 31 Nights of Halloween, I think, directly is responsible for some of these movies getting sequels, because we see them every year and because we want more. It's not like necessarily the movies are great, the sequels. They're there because nostalgia is specifically preyed upon with our generation. With our generation, okay? You don't see Shawshank Redemption 2 coming out anytime soon, right?
Well, okay, now hold on. I don't think that that's 100% true, because we've definitely had some, like, 80s classics.
Like Top Gun?
Like, things that our parents,
I guess,
were
yeah.
seeing. Top Gun, Terminator. Like, we had some reboots of those kinds of movies really making a comeback. Like, Men right. in Black also got a reboot. And I don't
some
know.
Some of those are 90s, though. But that's crazy.
We could go to, well, yeah, some of them are. But there were still movies that were a little bit older than our generation. They're like that middle right. chunk of time. Like movies that our parents were definitely watching, right? And definitely enjoyed. But I don't know. We could go down a rabbit hole about the idea of nostalgia.
Let's save that for like one of our non-movie specific recordings, I guess.
I don't know. We could.
So, Audrey.
So, sure.
First thoughts after you got to the end of this film. What were you thinking?
So I liked it. I did, like I said, I was able to find my kid brain and genuinely enjoy it.
I have such a hard time tapping into a kid brain to watch things that I'm like, it's so hard, but I feel where you're coming from. I have to do better.
You know, well, so you're talking about, though, movies that you've definitely seen before.
Yeah, because right? Even tapping into this, I was like, oh my goodness, I gotta really refocus my frame of reference. I gotta really try not to overthink this film because I'm sitting here thinking,
let me book a therapy session. Right, it's real like, fast.
Don't think deeply about the Cherie. Don't think deeply about the Cherie. Don't think deeply about the Cherie.
Because if you think too deeply about it,
yeah, it's hard to start to enjoy. It's like, why are we stealing children?
It's real weird, right? Stealing children, little kid. Like as a rule, children don't generally die in movies, and we don't, at least we don't especially show their deaths. It's kind of a cinematic, like, movie-making rule.
Nowadays.
Unless it serves a great
right.
purpose. I mean, even going back to, the 80s and 90s, it was kind of a rule. Again, unless it served a significant purpose. It was, like, I remember my dad telling me about that. Like, they don't kill children in movies. Especially, like, not on
right.
camera. Which, and I guess Emily doesn't really die on camera. It's just like, they're, what?
Oh, the younglings.
Obi-Wan said, you killed the younglings. I'm sorry. I just heard Jimmy Fallon in my head going, no, I killed
yes. that younglings. Oh my gosh. Again, I'm so glad you and I are like the only two people in the world who know that reference.
The only two people in the whole universe who have ever seen that sketch.
So anyway, how'd you feel when you got to the end of this film? Oh, we could
go down a whole rabbit hole. So, I didn't quite feel a sense of closure, I don't feel like. So here's the thing. I have whatever the genetic code is in my DNA to be an extreme animal lover, as everyone knows that I have 4 cats and 2 dogs. So at the end of the movie, like I know that Thackeray was really a little boy trapped in a cat's body for 300 years. And that's tragic, but he was adorable and he was hilarious. And he was like a Salem voiced by kind James of Marston. Vibe, you know, like for Sabrina. Yes. So I don't know. For me, it felt, I didn't like the cat dying.
I 100,000,000% agree. I remember as a kid being so angry that he couldn't stay a cute cat forever. As an adult, I'm like, right. He absolutely deserves to go to his afterlife and enjoy it after being stuck right, in a cat body for 300 years.
Here's the thing, and I think this could honestly kind of be talked about as like the crux of the spirit of this movie is just like taking some things a little bit past their okay point, but masking it in comedy, is what, like, as a writer, if I'm writing that, what I don't do is have the cat die. What I do is when the Sanderson sisters die and dissipate into evil sparkles, that Thackeray then.
It's so true. Ma'am.
Sorry. You're going to think that every time they die in the movie now.
The sparkles go nowhere. They're just gone. These are the things I was thinking. They just watching the end of the film, like, where did the sparkles go?
Just gone into the ground to grow little evil flowers. So anyway, as a writer, when the Sanderson sisters die, how I would have written that for better closure would have been to have their spell on Thackeray break and to have the cat, like how he transformed in the beginning, to finally have him transform back out of a cat into a little boy. The cat didn't need to die for Thackeray to, well, fudge, he did.
Well, I think about this too. Like, well, what if he could have just lived his life as a cat and then just died in 9-ish, 10-ish, 20-ish years, however long a cat lives. Just let him live his life as a cat and then right, eventually so you have, go on to the afterlife.
Right. You have two options there. Either he can live on as a cat, but I feel like you do have the acute awareness that he's actually a human boy and you have like kind of a benign Peter Pettigrew situation going on there. Or you could have them, the witch's spell, break. him transform out of being a cat. Or you, it's a I have another for question sake. For you about have the cat. Him, why do I go down this cat is my next question. Hole, this is like the second hold episode. Hold on, because like
when the Santa, okay, let's say he stays a cat, right? Does he still have the ability to talk after the Sanderson sisters die? That's the question.
Oh my gosh! No, he doesn't. Oh, but then why would he stay right. a cat
this,
then?
See, this is... Everyone who listens to this, tell us your theories.
No, okay. So, no, he does... Here's, and I have
I still want to hear your theories, even though she said no.
To support this with. So, please, yeah, tell us your theories, for sure. Like, please, contradict me. I love when people contradict me. I love having spirited academic debate. So, about cats. So, no, he could still be able to talk... even after they die, because when they die at the beginning of the movie, their spell to bring them back did not die with them. It's not like other lore surrounding witches where you have to like kill not them in order to break exclusive. Their magic. Right. So that's my theory, is that he could have still been able to talk even if they died, because death does not cause their
well,
magic
and you could also because correct. I think you're. I think I'd have to agree with that because he's obviously a very conscious cat, protecting people from going to that house. So he had a lot of self awareness to keep people away for 300 years.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that magic right, doesn't exactly. die with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my theory anyway. But back to the original question. I think. I need this on a t-shirt. I've said this like four times now. I need the words from a writing standpoint on a t-shirt because I say it about once every other episode. They could have just used magic because this is a movie with magic in it, right? To just transform him from a cat and sparkle magic, he turns into a spirit boy and goes into the afterlife and finally gets to be with his sister again. Because that was some nice closure, him getting to be with his sister again. I just wish that they hadn't done it with him uh-huh. dying. Because that was heartbreaking. I literally, like, picked up my big old 18-pound black cat and was like, Remy, no.
I always thought it was really cute, though. Like, I always loved the bond between Thackeray and Danny. I thought it was so cute. Like, the
yeah,
little...
Yeah, because she was, like, the sister that he hadn't right. gotten to save and, the
and
first
that's,
time
I
around.
Love that story, and that's, you know, kind of the point of the story is, you know... You got this brother and sister who are definitely at odds with each other. I mean, there's an age gap. And they're both
yeah
right and, but I love that the beginning story with Thackeray and Emily definitely transcends into the main plot points of between Max and Danny. Love that. On top of that, mm-hmm. Thora Birch, who plays Danny, great acting in this film. I remember being yeah. I remember loving mm-hmm. her acting when I was a kid watching this film.
Aww. I was reminded with Thackeray and Emily, I was reminded of, I think I had you watch this, Rise of the Guardians.
Love that film. Love that film. We got to do that yeah. one at some point. We got to do that for the holidays
this
year.
Did we go see that? We didn't go see that together. I think we did
we
go
watched
see
it,
it around
I
the
think,
same time.
No, I think we watched it in college together.
I know, I'm sure we did, but I think I remember seeing it in theaters with my family.
I did not. I know the first time I saw it, I definitely was, it was not in
yeah,
theaters.
Yeah, you probably watched it with me then. But it reminded me of how Jack Frost wound up where he was, the beginning of the movie. You know, just big brother trying to save little sister mm-hmm. and it ending in tragedy.
Yeah.
Except in that version, it was Jack who wound up as Jack Frost right. instead. But right. yeah, that was like same because like same vibes because like same period of time that it's taking place, uh-huh. right? Like the Puritan era. Because I think where does that movie take place? Is it like New England area also?
I have no idea. I would never be able to tell you where it happened.
I'm going to Google that. Burgess, a fictional town modeled after colonial era Pennsylvania.
Okay, so not far off the mark.
So yeah, so not far. Just like the whole. Early settled New England area, which makes sense. I had a question for you about this. It's a random question, but it's one of those things that doesn't get answered because I have a bone to pick with some of the writing in this.
Really?
Imagine that. Audrey has a writing bone to pick with something. Why do you think what was his name? Dennison? Max Dennison?
Yeah.
Why do you think the Dennison family had to move to Salem?
For the plot. Audrey, why do you ask me these questions? Why?
Because it doesn't get answered, and my little writer brain is upset about it. It doesn't need to get
answered.
Give me an answer.
For plot. You're a writer, too. Let me think about this. So they were living in Los Angeles. To be moved so far away, it obviously for a job, like, what? What job are you going from Los Angeles to do to the East Coast? Don't know. Can't figure that one out. I could not tell you. Dad has to work in, like, computer industry. The early days of Apple.
I'm gonna...
The Macintosh?
Well, no, Apple was in California. Why would he have
maybe moved? I don't know. That's the question. He's moving it to the East Coast. Steve Jobs said, move it to the East Coast. Dennison family.
Perhaps. If I had to guess, it would be investment banker.
Something like that.
And he needed to be in a closer time zone to be more aligned with some of their European
I'm
partners.
I'm so tired of you. I can't stand it. Why did you ask this question? Ask me something more fun.
I thought of it right now, and so I'm like, now I want to know.
No, Audrey. No. Absolutely not. No. You know what? Let me pose this for the audience. Do you guys care why they moved from Los Angeles to Salem?
Shut up.
I hope someone says yes just to make me feel stupid.
Oh my, please someone say yes. Please someone be on my side. Someone loves
me. Audrey, let me ask you a fun question. Which Sanderson sister do you like better? Which one did you vibe with the most?
Oof. Oof. Winnie. Winnie.
Fun
for
fact.
Sure.
Because I have a fun fact for you real quick. I was watching a Bette Midler interview where she said Winifred's outfit was modeled after the Queen of Hearts from...
I thought so. I thought so. I got it from the lipstick. I got it from the blush. And I got it from the heart-shaped hair.
Yep, from Alice in Wonderland.
I
didn't know
it.
That until recently. I was like, that's incredible. Because now
she
I can't unsee
totally
it.
She totally had off with her head vibes. I love it. I'm so glad that you told me that. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you told me that. Because I literally remember sitting, watching this movie going, like, she reminds me of, like, the Helena Bonham Carter portrayal of the Queen of Hearts in the Tim Burton version. Which I love that movie. Love, love, love. I love whenever Tim Burton does live action movies. I love it so much. Because he has to tone down his grotesquerie.
My mom.
He has to tone it down a little bit. And it makes it excellent.
It's a whole discussion for a later Tim Burton film we eventually do. My mom's thoughts on Tim Burton.
We should talk about that movie at some point. Because it is just...
There's a lot I could say about that film.
Visually. There's so much we could say about that film. Anyway. I'm so glad that you told me that because now I have emotional closure about Winnie's character.
So Winnie, you relate to Winnie the most.
I vibe with Winnie the most because I love that she is definitely, I like how all of the Sanderson sisters have like this ability. They all have their own specialties. Mm-hmm. Like Sarah is like a ditzy, Sarah had like ditzy Harley Quinn vibes. And I loved it.
Okay, yes.
I loved it. Like, do you get it, though? Like, ditzy Harley Quinn vibes. Just, like, kind of psycho, but still staying kind of on mission a little bit. But her thing is being able to sing hypnotically to bring the children to them. And I loved the musical inclusion in this movie. We'll talk about
that. Oh, my gosh. I have thoughts on the music.
I'm sure you do. So I love that. I love, what's the other sister? Mary, I like that she has, like, the sniff-out children gene, and Winnie needs her. Winnie needs her for that. She is crucial because Winifred does not have that ability. So, like, Winifred's the most powerful, but she definitely relies on her sisters to bring them the children.
It's so funny.
Her abilities.
I don't know why, but they somehow remind me of Pinky and the Brain. I don't know, but like the dynamic somehow, like, you have the brains, but you also need your idiot sidekicks because you're nothing without them.
Right. You always need an Igor because there's jobs that you can't slash won't do. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, I like Winifred's character the best out of all the Sanderson sisters because she definitely has the most power as a witch because she's I saw somebody call it an electropath. where she can, like, control some kind of, like, energy. Mm-hmm. And that's what she uses on people, which I think is a cool word. I want to look into that. But she can do that. Neither of her other sisters can. So she is definitely the leader. But what cracks me up the most about her is she constantly has these moments of just like, ugh, why do I have to explain my plan again to you idiots? And like, not to sound egotistical. I don't want to sound egotistical, but like the amount of times that I have experienced that feeling, like specifically at work, where I'm like, oh, why don't you guys get it? So I vibe with that. I vibe with that feeling in my soul. I feel like her and
Yzma would get along very much from Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, so much. I mean, like, they're definitely villains, but it's very much like an exhausted adult vibe. Because I feel that. I feel that in my soul. I, too, am an exhausted adult.
Always.
Because instead of life, blood of children, I just buy moisturizer.
Oh, you're so funny.
Thank you.
You've had some very good zingers this music. Episode.
Thank you. I'm never going to top peanut butter licking fingers, but I
you
try.
Got close this episode. You had me laughing. I got to turn down my volume on some of these laughs.
I love it. It's fine. Music. You wanted to talk about music.
Music was odd. It's, again, because of the weird tones in this film between, again, five characters die at the beginning of this film, and the music tone just doesn't fit the vibe. But it can't fit the vibe, because this is technically, arguably, a kid's film. Somewhere between kid, teenager, early adulthood. I don't know. I can't even decide who this film mm-hmm. is for.
A preteen film, I feel
right,
like.
And you...
It's a preteen
it's
film.
It's funny because... Kenny Ortega, who has directed a ton of Disney stuff, probably most notably, I believe, High School Musical was one of the big ones he did.
High School
But he did Musical. So yep, many films for Disney. And it's when I watch one of a Kenny Ortega film, I'm like, yep, that's him. I feel it deeply. It's the teenage
he
drama
has.
All the time.
Yes, teenage drama all the time. And he loves his choreography. Mm-hmm. Kenny Ortega does.
You can tell.
He loves his choreography. And that was one of the things that I noticed about this. And I'm so glad that you connected those dots of this being a Kenny Ortega film. Because he's very into coordinated acting mm-hmm. movements. Like things that are like overly dramatic.
Like the sisters walking together.
When it comes to bodily movements. That's exactly what I was thinking. And they called it something. They called it something too. It's like something sniff. Mm-hmm. Or like sisters. Because
they
don't
did
know.
It inside the it high school. Rather. The physical acting is so funny. I love it in this film. It's so good. The physical acting is so good. Sarah Jessica Parker, you know, her character, Sarah, funnily enough, Mary and Winifred all have
really fun
physical acting they do in this film, or they talk funny. Like, you know, Mary has the weird, like, chin mouth thing. Sarah Jessica Parker's character, she walks around funny. Again, as you said, ditzy. Winifred has the... Mm-hmm.
Harley Quinn vibes.
Maniacal, evil...
She's got the teeth. She's got the crazy teeth. The teeth and the long nails, and she's just...
But it's so dramatic, and it's very Kenny Ortega to have dramatic characters and dramatic movement, as you said. Mm-hmm. The caricature, the choreography, all great. This is one of those films where I can definitely... Although very odd and very niche, I think we can put this film. It's so funny,
sure.
But so...
Again, cult classic.
Yeah, cult classic. Niche films are always got some weird about them, right? They always got a weird vibe. That's why mm-hmm. we like them, and that's why this movie is so good.
That's why they don't get popular until you get used to
it
after a while.
Right.
That's, I feel like, the key is the getting used to it. You're like, okay, on the seventh watch, you're like, yeah, I like this movie.
And people will dress up for Halloween as the Sanderson sisters forever. This is a classic film. It's going down as a classic someday. Hocus Pocus 2? Probably not. Hocus Pocus 1? Yes.
No. Pure nostalgia. Pure nostalgia and merch
right.
grab. Now I'm thinking about all the Kenny Ortega, like all of the Kenny Ortega like visual moments in mm-hmm. this movie. And I'm gonna have to go watch it and like
Death
pick them out.
Sparkles,
because I remember thinking there's There's one at the very beginning, and it's when Thackeray is trying to save his sister, and he, like, gets, zapped, and then he, like, climbs, like,
the ladder?
Weakly climbs up this ladder, so and then, like, holds on to it. I wish you guys could see me reenacting this, and he's, like, holding on to it, but it's, like, a way that, like Leonardo DiCaprio would grip a piece of wreckage, like, in a very masculine, manly way.
I love you so much right now, because every time I see you do that, I don't know why I think of Titanic. I'm like, this is Titanic. I'm so glad I'm not the only freak in this world who thinks Titanic when he's climbing up that stupid ladder.
That's exactly what
also,
I was thinking.
To go on a tangent, dude, shut up.
Tangent.
Be quiet. Why are you making all this noise in a witch's hut? You're going to get got.
You're gonna get gassed.
Act like you're dead. Be quiet.
Oh my god.
It's pissed me off so much every time I see this film. Like, dude, be quiet. Act like you're dead. Rule of thumb.
You're just yelling at the movie. Like, be quiet, bro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love it. I love it
so
much.
You wouldn't see black people doing that.
No.
we'd have never even gone in that hunt. Sister's gone. Call the police. No, I'm just kidding.
No, because they're like, no, I'm gonna die first. I'm not going in the hunt. I'm not stupid.
Thank you. We're turning around. We're not going there. Three white ladies trying to lure me into a building. No. Mm-mm.
No. Hey, LL Cool J made it all the way through Deep Blue.
Deep Blue Sea.
But Sam Jackson did get swallowed whole.
Oh my god, that's another one. Oh my god, this is your funniest episode yet.
I love that. I'm so glad, because I had like no notes.
This is another one where I'm like, has anyone seen Deep Blue Sea other than us? That movie scared me out of my mind as a child. I had nightmares about Deep Blue Sea. I don't know why my family thought it was a good idea for 8-year-old Cherie to stay up and watch Deep Blue Sea with them on DVD.
Oh my gosh.
That's cried in my mom's arms idea. That night.
Oh no.
I dreamed a shark ate me. I saw Samuel L. Jackson get eaten.
That's understandable. Maybe that's where my Shark Week obsession came from. I wanted to understand my terror.
That's my obsession with tornadoes. Terrifying. Beautiful.
There you
terrifying.
Go.
Terrifying.
There you go.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. Good grief.
It's like why I watch true crime documentaries. Fascinating, but evil. But fascinating.
What other questions do I have for you? What was your favorite part? What'd you like best?
What was my favorite part?
I'll go first. I'll let you think about it. I think I'll
please,
say again,
yeah, please.
Thor Birch's acting is still incredible. There's obviously choppy parts where it could be better for everyone, but Thor Birch as a kid actress in this film, great. Loved her. She's my favorite part of this film.
It.
Her and Thackeray are my favorite part of this film every time I watch it. And of course, Winifred. Love Winifred. She's so funny, so condescending, so egotistical. She's great. I Put a Spell on You. We'll sing that song all year long. All year long.
Now I understand where that song came from. I like had heard it, but I didn't know that it came from this movie. I didn't know that this movie had any musical numbers at all.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Really?
I did not know that.
Stephanie, I remember us growing up, and she would always sing the song at the beginning of the, like, come little children. Yeah, she'd sing it all the
mm-hmm.
time. And, like, in a spooky way where
it's
I'd be like, you have to stop or I'm not staying the night anymore.
You're like, I won't be able to sleep. I'm just going to hear
you. I already
you
see
at
bears
2 in the morning.
And deer hanging on your walls. I don't need to hear you singing this
gosh!
To me. I won't sleep tonight.
Across
and across the street from her house, cornfields, aliens, whole place is scary.
We've done all those movies.
We've done all those movies. That's why her house was terrifying, but I went there all the time.
Stephanie, why did you have such a terrifying house?
Yes, why?
Why? Like she had a choice.
Answer
like,
me.
Like she picked it.
She's going to listen to this and be like, oh my God,
like,
airing
wow,
me
guys,
out.
Just calling me out left and right. Sorry, Steph.
Not sorry.
Bro, I do not have a good answer for you. This movie was funny. I liked the little moments where we got, like, some closure on stuff. I actually liked the little moment in the movie when we got some reprieve. When you thought that maybe the kids had... Yes, when you thought they maybe had vanquished the Sanderson sisters, and Danny just got to go home with little Binks, and she was going to take care of him forever, and she just falls asleep, and you hear him start purring.
Yes.
My heart. That was so cute. And then everything hits the fan afterwards, so. But I did like the little brief moments of reprieve. Also, hold on, rabbit hole, I need to look and find out, because this is a Disney movie, so there's actually a very good chance. Hold, we are going to go down a rabbit hole about this. This is going to drive me insane, because I think there's a decent chance that the dress that Allison wears as her Halloween costume in Hocus Pocus is similar, if not identical, to the dress that Elizabeth Swann wears in Pirates of the Caribbean.
No way.
Go look it up.
No way.
It is almost identical. I mean, granted, it is, like, period accurate, but being that this is a Disney movie, I'm like, there's a decent chance that they're just sharing a costume closet. It's definitely fancier. Like, they added, like, a petticoat to it. But I'm just like, what if? Because I saw her dress and I was like, that straight up looks like the Pirates of the Caribbean dress. You know, the one that she, like, gets too tight and then she faints and she falls over the balcony.
Yeah, I'm looking at them. They do look similar, but I wouldn't say that similar. Period accurate. They're similar. I would say for sure-sies, Keira Knightley's is more detailed, but they're similar. Yeah, they're similar. All right, Audrey, we're coming up on time. What, any final thoughts on Hocus Pocus?
Hold the phone. I'm gonna send you these two images and then I will promise I will abandon this dumb rabbit hole.
You dude.
So it's not exact. Hers has a pattern added to it, which I suppose could have been added later. Listen, but it's pretty darn disturb. Close.
You're not supposed to text me right now.
Put a sign on the door that says, dude. I am not texting you. I just texted my nail artist that. That's hilarious. Never mind. I'm going to have to abandon this rabbit hole because I tried to send those to you and I texted them to my nail artist instead.
Wah, wah.
The amount of times that wah, wah thing has been said in our household.
Final thoughts. Hocus Pocus.
Like, for years. Final thoughts. Hocus Pocus. You know what? I will say that I think that I have officially added this movie to my Halloween repertoire.
Love it.
So congratulations.
That's what I was going to ask, too, is do you think you'd watch it again in the future? Is this one you could turn on once a year and watch?
I would. Maybe once every other year. Maybe not like a, yes, this is my Halloween movie. Especially since I've just not been in the spooky season mood. I've been very in, like, a Pink-o-ween kind of mood. You know, like a cute Halloween thing. Spoopy, mm-hmm. if you will.
Spoopy, if you will.
So, but yeah. You know what? And I think I owe that temperament around it is exclusively to being able to find my kid brain going into watching this movie. If I had watched this with the scrutinous eye of a podcast host, I would not have enjoyed it as much. Although I did like the special effects.
If I had to look at this through our podcast lens, our real, like, detective, I would tear this film apart. Not because it's bad, just because there's nothing
with the writing.
There's nothing to write home about it when it comes to, like, I mean, you could obviously talk about Halloween symbolism and stuff like that, paganism, you know, all that, whatever. But this is just a film where you're supposed to enjoy it and have a fun ride with it, you know? It's not something you're supposed to sit 100%. And deep dive about and think too deeply about. Just one of those, it's a vibe. You sit there and watch it every it's year with your favorite Halloween films. Like, I love Monster House. It's one of those I watch every year. I also have great memory. Yes, I love Monster House. But that could be also with nostalgic feelings from, like, I used to watch it with my oldest niece and nephew when they were little. We'd sit there and watch that film every year. We have fun memories from watching that film. But, you know,
the Tim Burton movie?
Is Monster House Tim Burton? The little kids into the house?
Hold the phone. IMDb, here I come.
Love that film. That's one I would watch every year. It's so fun, so funny. But again, I'm not watching it with our podcast detective lens on.
Am I wrong? Is this not Tim Burton? Director Gil Keenan. Writers Dan Harmon. That explains a lot. Rob Schrabe and Pamela Petler. Nope, not a Tim Burton movie.
You might be thinking of Frankenweenie.
I think it's just got a Tim Burton vibe.
Yeah.
Like, it's spooky and it's computer animated.
Yeah.
Which to me is Tim Burton immediately.
This focus is one
Mitchell
Musso?
Watch.
Mitchell Musso, yeah. I think Renee Zellweger's in the film. Or no, it's the Gyllenhaal. Lady Gyllenhaal. What's her name? Maggie. Maggie Gyllenhaal is also
Maggie Gyllenhaal. Yes, Maggie Gyllenhaal's in this, and Steve Buscemi, and Catherine O'Hara, and Fred Willard. What a cast. Kevin James? Nick Cannon? John Heder? What is this movie cast?
We have to watch that one next year. I'm putting it on the list.
Apparently, I have not watched that movie forever, because when I went to go see it in theaters, the audio screwed up, and we watched the first half of the movie in silence, because they didn't fix it.
Wow.
So by the second half of the movie, I only had a mild idea of what was going on, so I didn't enjoy it. We started coming up with our own dialogue, so. But I'll watch it again for you. Okay.
Bless.
Well, I think that concludes our episode on Hocus Pocus. Next week was Cherie's pick, so we are going to be talking about the Disney villain origin story, Cruella, starring Emma Stone. So be sure to be back here next Saturday to tune in. Roll credits. Cinematic Pulse is edited and produced by Cherie Jackson. The episodes and theme are written and performed by yours truly. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and you can find Cinematic Pulse on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Thank you so much for listening, because we just checked your Cinematic Pulse.